Hello, my name is Daniel Marino, and this is the Motion Martial Arts Podcast. In this episode, Dave and I sit down and talk about the realities of trying to make a living with martial arts, as well as Dave's past as a touring musician, and in general, what it's like to pursue a passion in your life. Thank you very much for listening. All right, so today we're talking about pursuing a passion, which I think would be a really good topic for because of your past as a touring musician.
Yeah.
And, you know, how that obviously relates to trying to teach martial arts for a living.
Yeah, or even compete in martial arts.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't think that people realize how little money the guys that fight MMA or professional boxing, professional kickboxing, professional grappling.
Sure.
Professional wrestling. Not the fake wrestling, the real real wrestlers. The guys that are in the Olympics. How little money they make. But even the fake professional wrestling, it's only a couple guys at the top that are making any real money.
Yeah, I mean, think with anything like that. I always kind of got the impression that there was more money in boxing. I could be wrong, though. But I know.
It's an illusion. And,
sure.
Well, this is something, we tend to just jump right in, so we might as well just jump right in. So in my opinion, and I think that if you actually do research and you start looking at numbers, you'll find that it's an illusion. And there's a couple guys, it's the same thing with music, it's the same thing with jiu-jitsu, it's the same thing with boxing, it's the same thing with MMA. The illusion of the few people at the top that are making a ton of money paint this picture that there's a lot of the pie to go around for everybody, and it's a lie. It's a flat-out lie.
Sure.
So there's a few people making enough, or I shouldn't say making enough, there's a few people that are getting rich off of it that are actually doing the actual art, because usually it's somebody else, like a promoter or a record label, making the real money.
Yeah.
And then you have a couple studs or you know, high-level people that are making money as performers or artists or fighters or whatever. And then you have a tier that's making a living that's just like a middle-class living, and that there's a group of people in that subsect, but the bulk of it are people that are making
hardly anything.
Yeah, pretty much. They're barely making anything, and that's most of the reality.
You know, it's so hard for a fighter too, because the way you're sacrificing your health to pursue that, you know, is...
Well, we can talk about this more. With music, you sacrifice your health a lot too.
Sure. Yeah.
But, it's an illusion. So and you know, I'm a huge Chael Sonnen fan.
Yeah, I really like all the stuff he's been doing, kind of post-fighting too.
Yeah.
Bad Guy Incorporated, he's got a good show.
The thing is, if those of you who actually know the history of Chael, Chael is a high-level wrestler. He was a high-level wrestler. Wrestled in college. I think he was an Olympic alternate at one point, never made the actual Olympic team. Then transitioned to MMA, and the reputation on Chael is that Chael was one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in the entire world. And nobody wants to watch somebody who's nice.
Sure.
And nobody wants to watch somebody whose only real martial skill is wrestling. So Chael wasn't making much money or having much attention when that was the life he was living. So Chael had to become the fake professional wrestling heel and put on that persona.
Start playing the bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. In order to sell so he could stick around. Because if he doesn't do that, he's out.
Sure.
He's out. And he knew that.
Yeah. You see that with so many
fighters. So people... Yeah. There's probably a large group of people that don't know this, but Chael Sonnen used to train and came up with Randy Couture, Matt Lindland, and Dan Henderson in a team that's called Team Quest that was no longer exists, or if it does, nobody's there anymore. Mm-hmm. But Team Quest was those... Randy Couture, Dan Henderson, and Matt Lindland, who were three Olympic-level wrestlers.
Yeah.
All three of them. So I'm not sure if Matt Lindland actually was on an Olympic team, but Dan Henderson and Randy Couture were.
Yeah.
And at the very least, Matt Lindland, I know, won a world championship in wrestling. He might have been an Olympic... He might have made an Olympic team or even been an Olympic alternate, but I'm not 100% certain of that. So Chael Sonnen, as a result, got an opportunity to be in the UFC. And if you go back and watch those early fights... The way he talks, the way he acts is completely different than the point where he got famous.
Sure.
And he didn't have a ton of success in that first UFC run, but his personality wasn't selling either.
Yeah.
He went to a smaller organization and then won there a bunch and did great and then got the call up. And I think even in his first few matches after he got called up, he was still his normal, respectful self. And then he started to realize, hey, unless I come out and put on this persona and talk this trash and be this heel character, mm-hmm. I'm never going to make it to the next level. So he did it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a long story to get to my big point, which is that Chael Sonnen has said multiple times, and you can just find it on YouTube, he's like, Floyd Mayweather's amount of money that he's made in his career is one of the biggest lies in the history of the world. He also talks about, like, he's like, everybody talks about the numbers of those, the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight. He's like, I was at that fight. It's a lie. He's like, you could walk up and get tickets, like, as the fight was happening.
Yeah.
He's like, it didn't sell out. People didn't care as much as they said they did. But you need to sell that.
Sure.
You need to sell this illusion. So, like, it's like, you the promoters want to sell the illusion that Floyd Mayweather is rich. Richer than he is, and he is rich,
yeah.
But richer than he is, and Floyd Mayweather also wants to sell that illusion because it adds to his persona.
Yeah.
And so he's actually making less than what he's saying, and the promoters are paying him less than what he's saying to create this illusion. But he's the one in 50 million boxers per year that makes that. You know,
he's the top boxer. And it was for a year, even the top boxer in the world. And then
the people that are fighting on the undercard of that card are probably getting paid $20,000 if they win.
Yep.
And then that $20,000, their manager gets a cut, and then they have to pay their fight camp and their coach, the guy that tapes their hands a cut. So then what they're actually left with is probably about, before taxes, maybe $12,000.
Yep.
Then you got to pay taxes on it. How many times can you really fight a year? And in boxing, once you have a loss on your record, unless you already were built up through the hype machine and you're already super rich and famous, you have one loss, your career's done. Because that's the illusion of boxing, is these undefeated monsters. So they build them up where they fight cans.
Yeah.
And then
they want to get them 10-0 as quick
as possible. Exactly. And then they start to fight like a tier of guys that can actually win or beat them, you know? Yeah. So the system is, and this is true of, I feel like, all of the martial sports, and very true of music, is this illusion of money. Like, so going back to the music industry, I don't think that most people even realize that these contracts that these artists are signed to a major label is really just a loan. Mm-hmm. So you're given a signing bonus, that's your money, but most of the money that you're used to make an album and live off of is an advance. Yeah. And an advance is just a loan. And that's usually the bulk of your money, and you're supposed to pay back your advance through record sales, but the system's rigged.
If you don't get record sales, you can't pay them back.
So, but it's rigged because they go, okay, we're just going to throw out an arbitrary number. Here's $100,000.
Yep.
The $100,000 will be paid back off of the sales of your album, whether it's physical, digital, whatever. But per full sale of the album, only 75 cents of that will go back to recoup that $100,000. And we get our cut because we just get a cut. So if the album's selling for $10, we just get $4 off the top, and that's our share for investing in you. That does not pay back the $100,000 you owe us. 75 cents pays back the $100,000 you owe us. And the other pretty much $5.25, that's all to the people that are distributing the money or the music and, you know, the streaming services or whatever, you know, it is. They're taking their cuts. So you're really only 75 cents per full album sales going back to recoup your $100,000. Well, then how many records do you need to sell? Right. Yeah. You need to sell a ton.
Yeah.
So like the whole system, it's an illusion. But, you know, it's like, that's why people are like, oh, how did so-and-so blow through all that money? Well, they never really had all that money.
Sure.
You know, but the fact that there's somebody backing them up, well, then people are willing to give you loans.
Yeah.
People
the music industry used to be different before digital music was a thing.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Yes
I mean, no. Always, there's always a very small percentage at the very top. But
so the difference was just that people had no choice but to pay for the music. Well,
people were selling millions of copies of
that
their
also,
albums.
If we really break it down, that's actually only a small window of time where that was really a thing, right? So, I mean,
like the 50s to the 90s?
Like, yeah, pretty much. Yeah, like probably the 1950s till like 1995.
Yep.
And then I think 95, 96 is when the illegal downloading thing started with Napster and all that stuff. And that's where the shift became.
Yep.
And then you devalued it. And
now it's all streaming.
But the system was the same. It was just that if people wanted music, they had to buy it for the most part. And there were some things that were going on. Like, you hear people that were like, you know, making copies of tapes and passing it around.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff
yeah,
like that.
Of course.
But the system was way different, so it was much harder to, you know, exchange the music.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the reality is that the amount of money that has always been portrayed to be in any of the arts,
mm-hmm.
martial arts, visual arts, acting, music, is always a lie.
Well, it's always based on the idea that there's a very, very small, you know, like less than 1% of artists, you know, kind of occupy that place where they're at the top, you know, they're very successful in that industry. And it's kind of, it's one of those things where I've heard it referred to before as the Matthew principle, just the idea that, you know, if you're a successful artist who manages to get an audience, you know, it's like you can just produce more and more content and you'll continue to be successful with it. And there's all of these people below you who, you know, are going to struggle to get any kind of recognition whatsoever. So it's one of those things that I think is a big problem for just, you know, anything you kind of do in your life, but especially any kind of creative pursuit, is that it's always hardest at the beginning when you have no accomplishments. The accomplishments tend to, like, compile. You know, it's like as you start to become successful, the opportunities in front of you become a lot more, you know, there's a lot more opportunity in front of you. So it makes it that there's a very small number of people that are making all the money in an industry.
One of the differences, though, between, and I think this is, I kind of want to almost throw being a chef in there as well.
Yeah.
The cooking arts.
Sure.
The huge difference between the visual arts, music, being an actor or actress, versus being a martial artist, is that it is easier to co-op and steal in all these other platforms and become one of the top dogs,
mm-hmm.
than it is in martial arts. And it's, you can do it to a certain extent in martial arts, but if you are a prize fighter, you have to fight at some point.
Yeah,
so stealing somebody's technique is irrelevant, because if they can't pull it off actively in the highest level of competitions, then
sure. Well, yeah, I mean, but look at fighting as a separate thing, definitely.
I'm going to probably tell some music stories right now of things that people don't probably know and realize, but Led Zeppelin is a great example.
Yeah.
So it is almost, at this point, I think that people that are into music history, none of this is going to come as a shock, but it's pretty much, at this point, it's a known fact that Jimmy Page was blatantly stealing music.
Mm-hmm.
From people. He was a session musician, and he had this thing which I literally believe he's been was quoted as saying this, and I don't think he ever actually said it, like it's like whisper through the lane things that he said out loud to other musicians that he stole music from, producers and stuff like that, where he was like, can't play it, it's not yours. I can play it, you wrote it, but you can't play it. I played it, didn't make it on the record, I stole it, it's now a Led Zeppelin song. Sure. prove it's yours, you can't play it. And like, there's a famous band called The Kinks, which I think we might have even talked about this
in a previous episode.
Yeah. Where he straight up has, there's Led Zeppelin songs that are songs that those guys wrote. They wrote the guitar part that he's playing.
Yeah.
You know? And The Kinks were a popular band too, but not as popular as Led Zeppelin. So with some of these, like, other arts, there's a little, and it happens in martial arts to a certain extent too, where maybe somebody has come up with a new move or something like that, and somebody else ends up making it famous, and then they become known for it.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit less, because at the end of the day, usually the person who became famous for it in martial arts is because they used it in a fight.
Sure. Well, I mean, you've probably heard of the Einstein quote. I wonder if it's a real quote from Einstein, but I've heard it for years, that it's like, you know, being a genius is about hiding your sources, or something to that effect, essentially. It's like, and it's similar to the idea that I've seen used, or the saying I've heard a lot in martial arts circles, like, there's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah.
Just kind of the idea that everybody, there's always, you know, collaboration, and, you know, nobody, like, to say that somebody has, like, a truly original idea. We've talked about this a little bit, I think, even specifically about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, kind of the idea.
Yeah.
It's like, whether, like, I would say this is definitely something that, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has a concentration on, you know, ground fighting. And submission, like, and that distinguishes it from judo, that in general, judo concentrates on the throwing.
Yeah.
But it's all blanket terms. You know, there are plenty of judo people that were specialists on the ground fighting.
Exactly. And Nuwaza, like, and then this is the same thing. There's jiu-jitsu guys that are specialists in the stand-up.
So that's why a lot of people make the argument whether or not, like, there's really a very sharp distinction to be made between judo and jiu-jitsu. It's like they're really the same arts at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of concentration.
I mean, again, going to music and this co-opting and sort of, you know, stealing idea to a certain extent. Probably the bands I'm mentioning, I'm sure lots of the people that are going to listen to this might not have even heard of them, but it's easy to find these bands. So there's a band called Minus the Bear. That are a pretty relatively well-known indie rock band. Well,
I've heard of them.
The guitar player from Minus the Bear used to play in a band called Botch, which is a pretty metallic, or for those of you that aren't aware of these terms that I'm probably throwing out, they're pretty much a hardcore band that were a little bit more experimental, so heavy music that leans towards metal, but a little bit, you know, more out there. And this band Botch is one of my favorite bands of all time. And while they were a band, pretty much nobody cared about them. Mm-hmm. But when I first was, you know, starting to play music, I guess as a young adult, so we're talking about like 18, 19, probably like up until I was like 24, 25, there was a huge music movement called like metalcore. And one of the bands that was getting ripped off left and right, very poorly in my opinion, was Botch. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so all these other bands were pretty much taking what Botch did, doing it without the same level of technical proficiency.
Yeah.
But they were just kind of releasing it at a time where maybe people got it a little bit more. And these other bands became huge and popular. And Botch is kind of like a footnote, but they're a band that had been ripped off left and right. And probably most of those bands that sounded like Botch in 2007 no longer exists. Nobody cares about them anymore.
Yeah.
And probably people will still find Botch records 10 years from now, but in the grand scheme of things, less people will listen to Botch, but Botch's influence is more wide reaching. And I think you find that a lot with like sort of some of these arts. It's like a chef comes up with some killer dish, but it's the other chef at some famous restaurant maybe that makes it popular.
Yeah.
You know, it the left and right. And again, it's a little bit more difficult for that to happen, in my opinion, than the martial arts.
It's kind of funny what exactly gives you recognition. It's not kind of that creative inspiration. You know, it's whether or not you can successfully get that idea out to an audience. So somebody may come up with something that's unique and original, but it's like if they don't successfully get that out to an audience and someone else takes it and gets it to a large audience like that, they're the ones that will get the recognition. Yeah.
So jumping into now the meat of the topic, which is pursuing what you're passionate about.
Which is what motivates people like musicians or martial artists to pursue these things that it's financially, you know, like never rich, not... If you're trying to make, you know, a lot of money through martial arts, you're an idiot. It's like some people that do, and coming from a karate background, you know, it's like I would generally say the teachers you have out there that are making a lot of money teaching karate, generally it's very, very low quality martial arts is what they're doing. They're the McDonald's of the karate world often.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, that there are people who make really good money, you know, especially through the teaching side of martial arts. But in general, you know, if you're, you know, guys like you and I that, you know, kind of have a passion for martial arts and trying to pursue it as a career, it's obvious that your incentive is not primarily a financial one.
Yeah. I will say though, that I think that there's too much emphasis put on the people that are like the top of the food chain, and not talking about the person who owns a school.
Yeah.
And that school, after all their expenses is paid, is bringing them in $50,000 a year. So it's an untraditional way to get $50,000 a year, but they're still getting $50,000 a year at the end of the day.
Yep.
And those stories are not, they're not put out there enough as being huge success stories, but they are huge success
stories. Yeah. If I get to the point of making $50,000 a year teaching martial arts, as far as I'm concerned, I made it. Like, you know, it's like, that's like living the
dream.
But
like, that's the thing is that the when you just do any of the arts, the idea of what people deem as successful I feel like from outsiders, people that are not also artists themselves, is completely skewed. And that's why you kind of have to be passionate, in my opinion, about this and, you know, making these decisions. Now, that's not always the case for everyone. I think that there's a large group of people that are just like, I can't do anything else. There's just nothing else for me. Like, I'm just going to go play music, or I'm just going to go be a painter. I'm going to go to art school because I don't know what else to do with my life. I'm good at this jiu-jitsu thing. I don't really feel like teaching, but what else am I going to do if I don't go out? Or, hey, I'm going to be a fighter, because if I'm not a fighter, what else am I going to do with my life? I probably would just be a drunk at the bar, maybe. Or yeah. I'd be working at McDonald's or whatever. You know? So,
sure.
So like, for some people, that's just like, they're like, I would not be doing anything worthwhile if I didn't go down this path. And I think that's a small group of people.
Sure.
I also think there's another group of people that are like, hey, I want to be super successful and famous. Those people, from my experience in music and martial arts people, those people usually flame out.
Sure.
They either make it really quick and they're successful, or they completely burn out, because the shelf life for that mentality is short.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, sure. The thing is like, you cannot be sustained by this idea of, hey, I want to be rich and really well known, and have that be your motivating factor and expect to have that drive you for 5 years, 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably not even going to drive you for 2 years, because yep. You're looking for shortcuts, and there's not really a lot of shortcuts.
Yep.
In this. And I think from the outsider's perspective, if you're like, hey, I work part-time teaching martial arts and I make $16,000 a year from it, they kind of look at you like, why don't you just get a normal 9-to-5 job? They kind of, and again, like, well, it's like an outsider doesn't understand. It's like, well, listen, like, not only is this something I enjoy, it's something that's good for me, I'm giving back to these other people doing something that's good for them, but like, there's a lot of freedom for that being my part-time sure, job.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of freedom to living a life where you're pursuing.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a conversation we've ever had before, but that's kind of something that I think that I know we actually have had conversations like this in the past, but it's that freedom is what it's kind of all about. Like, I think that kinds of people that pursue artistic pursuits and things that they're passionate about, like martial arts, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's about being able to own your life and your time.
Yeah.
It's like the kind of thing that, and I have actually like a kind of respect for people that are able to do this, and, you know, especially doing it to provide for their family and stuff like that. But the idea of like that 8-hour workday, the idea that you sell your life to someone else for a paycheck, 8 hours every day for the rest of your life. It's like, that's the kind of thing that I just feel like I could never do that, you know? And even if I'm only making, you know, I don't know, $50,000 a year would be awesome, you know, but let's say $20,000 a year during martial arts, I'll do that until the day that I die, to have the freedom to feel like I own my life, that, you know, I'm doing exactly what I want to do. I'm making my own decisions. I'm out there in the world kind of, you know, pursuing it. And not only that, but I also feel like, I mean, I'm like giving back too. I'm giving the world something that adds value to people's lives. They need martial arts. It's good for them.
Well, I mean, so yeah. I started traveling the world playing music pretty much at, I mean, I guess the real travel didn't start to happen until, like, I guess I was probably in like my mid-20s.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was in college at Drexel University, and I was like, started a band at 20. I was in bands before that, but it was like in a band. The band, I'm like, oh, there's just something different about this. And we're probably like a year into it, start booking things out of state that are just like completely do-it-yourself mentality. And then it starts to build and continues to build. And I'm like, okay, so I start to set my whole life up around, my whole 20s are spent building my life around, how do I get to play music and travel the world playing music? And I made that happen.
Sure.
And my sacrifices would be when I was at home working retail sales jobs that sucked, and I really didn't care.
Yeah.
I didn't care at all. I'd be like, hey, I'll work retail because guess what? I'm going to Europe for 6 weeks straight to play music. I'll work retail. I'm going to Australia for 3 weeks. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'll work retail. I'm going to be in California in 3 weeks playing a show in San Francisco. I'm good. I'll do it. Hey, I'm going to Russia. Hey, I'm going to Japan. Hey, I'm going to China. You know, I got to do all those things.
Sure.
But then My life had a drastic change because I met somebody and had a kid. So pretty much I went and got a 9-to-5 job, and having a 9-to-5 job was literally the most miserable 3.5 years of my life.
Yep.
And I was like, listen, this is just not for me. I'm glad that other people find this happiness in this, but I'm like, this is just not the life for me. Yeah. And you can take me back to all those years of touring and not really making a lot of money, not really having what most people would consider success. I was much happier, and I consider those some of the most successful, happy times of my life.
Sure.
And I was like, for me personally, I was like, hey, listen, this doesn't work for me. There's nothing fulfilling for me personally working these traditional 9-to-5 jobs. For plenty of people, there are. That they love that. That's their thing. You know, and, sure. and that's their passion, and that's perfectly cool. Some people wake up every day and they're like, man, I love going and working on the stock market.
Sure.
I like trading stocks. That's my hobby. That's my
I kind of get the impression that's like, you know, like there's a social environment when you're at work. You know, people, they get along with their coworkers well, and you know, it's like maybe they're not particularly passionate about their job, but then they have other things in their life, their family and stuff like that. It just works for some people, you know.
I think that context, though, I think if people are trying to be sustained by the social aspect of a job, I think they're going to be disappointed, because I think if you look at mm-hmm. in the United States, the average length of time that any employee spends, no matter where they're working at a job, is probably not that long.
Sure.
But I again, it's comes down to the individual person.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, like there is a lot to be said for pursuing these things that you like to do. Now, on the flip side of that, it still ends up being a job. And I think that there's lots of people that get exposed to, you know, hey, oh man, it must be so cool that you got to you were in Prague 3 weeks ago playing a show. Well, yeah, I was in Prague 3 weeks ago playing a show, but I literally got to walk around for 20 minutes and we had to leave to go drive the next day to some faraway place.
Sure. Yeah.
Because the drive to the next show was 12 hours. So we played the show, fell asleep in the van. Dinner was nothing all that fancy. We're not going to eat breakfast.
Yeah.
We're going to take shifts driving overnight so we get to play music. You know, so like...
Well, there was a conversation we had just a couple episodes ago where you said something I thought was really great to illustrate that point, which is you said that when you're like kind of a band that's trying to make it and reach a bigger audience, you're faced with a lot of decisions where it's like, if we drive an extra 12 hours, we can play this bigger show over here.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't take that opportunity. Somebody else will. That's being your own boss. And, you know, and it's one of those things that it's just like... Working for yourself is great. Like, I really think it's what's best for me, and it makes me feel like more free. Like, but you do have to be your own boss, as in you do have to be a hard ass with yourself.
And there's all these other things. Like, so I remember, like, at some point, the band I'm in, even though I don't tour anymore, decided to self release music. So then we had to become an LLC. We had to go through all that, and it's like, well. Before that, the band wasn't doing taxes. Well, now the band does taxes every year.
Yeah.
You know, like, people don't think about that stuff. It's sure. like, well, now we all have to be held accountable for keeping receipts because we need to write that stuff off at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Like, that stuff matters, because if we don't write it off, then we're going to be paying a lot of money at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Like, it still is a job, and that's Absolutely. Why the passion for it has to sustain you.
Yeah.
And in martial arts, like, so it's... For people that are into grappling, it's ADCC right now. It's happening literally right now as we speak, the finals. There's a guy from Allentown named John Blank. I do not know him personally,
mm-hmm.
but he was a guy who I told a couple people. I've watched him, you know, because he's kind of well known, mm-hmm. especially in the area. He's done Eddie Bravo Invitational and whatnot. And he's upset a few guys. I told people, I was like, I think he's going to do really well. So he ended up coming in fourth place out of 16, which means in no-gi grappling right now, he for his weight class, he's pretty much the fourth best guy in the world in no-gi grappling. He works, I believe, as an electrician.
Yeah.
And is just opening up a school right now in Allentown. And I believe right now he's still going to be working his part-time job as an electrician. He's not training full-time. Some of these other guys that were in that division, probably most of the guys that were in that division with him, trained full time.
Yeah.
They're not in, and they're not even teaching. They're just training full time, most of the guys in his division. Sure. And they're just full time grappling competitors, and this guy is working his job. Most likely probably had to pay his own way out there, yeah. I assume. I mean, at this point, maybe ADCC, I don't know. Maybe you get paid to compete or flown out there. At least, I don't think you get paid to compete.
Cover your expenses.
I actually don't think you get paid. I only think the top three people get paid. But maybe at this point, I assume that all the expenses are being covered. I actually don't know the answer to that one way or another. But even still, he just lost work, time at work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's big. I don't care what, I mean, to me, it's obvious he loves it. Yeah. Or he wouldn't be putting himself through this, because he'd be like, why should I take, and that's what separates, I don't know how to put this without sounding like a sexist in 2019, but like, that's what separates the men from the boys, that old statement, right?
Yeah.
And the women from the girls, you know, it's, hey, I can stay at home, this is too hard, I don't want to do this, or I can go do it, and hey, I might fly to California, and this year it's in California, 2 years from now, ADCC could be in Finland again. Sure. That's where I think it was 2 years ago, and then 4 years ago it was in China.
Yeah.
Hey, I could fly to China to take on the best guys in the world, not win. I've lost all this work. I've invested all this time in training. I've destroyed my body. I don't have a penny to show for it.
Sure.
You know?
Well, you know, something I want to kind of get at that I feel like it's hard to articulate, but I know I'd be very surprised if you and I don't see eye to eye on it. But it's about, I feel like we're all trying to pursue like some sense of meaning in our life. You know what I mean? And that's why I think it's so important that people do these kinds of things. That it's just like, if you love martial arts, it's something that brings a lot of value to your life. Both of us are teachers too. So I know a little bit different from the competitor side of things, but as a teacher too, you feel that by being a teacher, you can add that to other people's lives as well. You know, it just gives you this sense of meaning that what you're doing with your life makes a difference.
Yeah.
You know, it's like not only it's something that you enjoy, you like the life that you live, you're happy to wake up every day and to go to work, go teach your classes. And it's also something that you feel that, you know, that you're adding and enhancing other people's lives by doing it. That makes it so sustaining. And it's one of those things that, in my opinion, like that's why you have so many people that are willing to make those sacrifices. To be like, you know, instead of going and getting that 9-to-5 job and making, you know, much better money doing that, where I'm able to, you know, have the things that I want, I'm going to make the sacrifice. I'm not going to live a different kind of lifestyle, you know, making far less money, but doing something that I like, that I care about, that I'm passionate about, you know?
Yeah, I agree. But to kind of flip the switch a little bit, I would say, though, that, again, it's important to remember that just because you're passionate about something, you don't have to make it your career.
Sure.
Just make it a hobby or something that you do. I think one of the biggest things that I have noticed, and this is like a question that I at work a while ago, there was a great conversation that I had with my boss. This is at my day job, and a friend of hers who's a guy who's highly successful in what he does in the physical therapy world. And he said, he was talking about interviewing people, and he was like, I ask them a question, and I forget what the question was. He's like, I ask them this question every time. He's like, I always look to see, like, how long does it take them to respond? Like, how do they answer it? And he's like, it's a way for me to check, like, is work going to consume their lives? Do they have a life outside of work? Because to me, it's important that they have a good balance. Sure. He's like, it's great kind of when you have somebody that is super focused only on work, but that can be unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And he's like, so I'm trying to see, but he's like, I also want to make sure that they do understand that work is something that's important and they need to be passionate and care about their job. Because to be honest, again, in the PT world, physical therapy world, there's some physical therapists that make a lot of money, but there's a bunch that don't.
Sure.
So if you're not passionate about getting people better, because you're really the one who's going to be spending a lot of hands-on time with somebody who's coming back from a surgery or an injury, more so than a doctor will be, if you aren't passionate about getting people better, it's not going to work. So in this little conversation, I said one of my favorite things to ask people is, what do you like to do, or what do you do? And in that, I sometimes will ask based off their answer, like if it's something where it's like, I'm like, hey, so what do you do? And they start talking too much like about at work. I'm like, if like you could do anything in the world, what's the thing you would do? Like, you're rich. What would you sit down and do? And it's amazing how few people have an answer.
Sure.
And it could be something simple. Hey, if I had all the money in the world, guess what? I would sit down and watch Game of Thrones and eat ice cream on my couch. Okay, at least you're passionate about something. To me, that's not a life that's good for me, but at least you have something where it's like, okay, you have an answer. But there's people that legitimately don't have an answer. And that to me is scary, because that's why I think we have so many issues with depression and so many people that are just walking through life aimlessly. And it's because of that. Like, sure. I'm like, if you ask me, what do I like to do?
Yeah.
I have multiple answers, and there's lots of things that I like to do that I don't get to do enough of. Like, so music, for a while, I was kind of burned out from playing so much music and touring, where I didn't really like music at all. I was only listening to stuff that I thought was bad and funny to make fun of. And then I kind of had like a little renaissance period where I was having fun making music, but I was still actively playing shows somewhat and traveling somewhat. And then, so there's an album by my band, the band's called Rosetta, called Quintessential Ephemera. And at that point, that was when I was kind of towards the end of being not really able to tour. So I did some touring behind that record. But at that time, that's when I had kind of fallen back in love with playing music and listening to music and being creative. That album, as a result, I think that everybody in the band at that time was feeling that way, has kind of like this really positive vibe to it. Well, the last record, which I think is an incredible record, I think it's one of the best pieces of art I was ever involved in. Well, I couldn't tour anymore. And I've played behind that record, I've literally played one show, mm-hmm. one show. So in 2 years since that album came out, it's pretty much almost 2 years exactly that it came out, I've played one show behind that record. And I've watched these guys travel the world all the time, and I can't do it anymore, and that's fine. But I'm like, you know, if you asked me 10 years ago, I would be like, man, there's nothing in the world more that I would want to do than do that. So music is something that I'm passionate about and still want to do. So like, it's like, it's changed. So the touring and traveling part doesn't happen anymore. So it's like, sure. I'll still make a record with Rosetta when we start writing the next record. But I just talked to a couple friends who I used to tour with that I was like, hey, like, why don't we just do a project where we start file trading? And I'm like, let's just create a thing of music where you write a part, I write a part, we figure it out, and then eventually we have 5-6 songs, we just put it out, we probably never play a show, but then I'm still doing something that I'm passionate about.
Sure. Well, you're talking about having a balance in your life.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, no, I understand what you
like,
mean.
Like, it's not all or nothing, and it doesn't have to be, like, to me, most people don't have a thing, period. So it's like, I love jiu-jitsu. As a conversation that I had with my instructor the other day, where, and it was something that I was doing that I shouldn't have been doing. I was engaging a little bit in some pretty much jujitsu drama and gossip that I shouldn't have been involved in. He straight up pulled me aside and was like, right now your career to a certain extent is teaching jujitsu. So you need to be professional. Mm-hmm. The second that anything is gossipy, you need to pull yourself aside and just be like, listen, I'm not going to be involved in this conversation. And you, there's a nice way to do it, but I was letting myself get involved in that.
Sure.
You know, so it's like, I'm passionate about jiu-jitsu, but it's also a job. So yeah. I need to conduct it myself in a professional manner at all times.
Yeah.
Music at this point is not really a job for me.
Yeah.
So it's just about me loving music.
Sure.
You know, like, if I were to paint a picture right now, it would just be because I want to paint a picture. I can't draw to save my life or paint to save my sure. life. But it would just be for the pure passion of it. Yeah. And that is a different approach. And that's something that people need to do too. It does.
Sure. I'm not sure if we've ever had this conversation, but I've had it with other people several times over the last couple of years. And it's something, you know, I'm not much of a musician, but I've been taking guitar lessons for 2 years now. You know, I've kind of been a big music fan like my whole life, and I'm really glad that, you know, something I always wanted to do was learn how to play a little bit. I'm really glad it's something that I've finally done.
Yeah.
Because it gives me, first of all, a better appreciation for like the music that I already liked. It makes me really appreciate how, you know, good professional musicians often have to be in order to do what they do. And it's also, you know, this is the conversation I wouldn't be surprised if we've talked about before, but it's that I think that in our culture, we tend to treat hobbies as very frivolous things.
Yeah.
That it's like your hobby, you know, oh, it's just a hobby. You know, it's like that kind of thing. But hobbies matter. They're important. You know, it's important that you have those things in your life because they really enrich you. You know, they really give you things that help you to learn a little bit about yourself and to engage, you know, with the world around you. For instance, I first started taking guitar lessons, and it was something I always wanted to do, but what made me finally make the leap and go and start doing it was another teacher who I'm an acquaintance of was involved in a conversation where he said that if you are a teacher in anything, of course he's a martial artist, talking specifically about martial arts, he said you should pick up a new hobby every 5 or 10 years because yeah. It forces you to go back into that beginner mindset. It's like suddenly for me personally over the last 2 years when you're actually trying to learn how to play guitar and it's a really big struggle just to put your fingers in the shape for these chords and everything. Like you can't play at all. I mean, it makes you understand what your students are going through a little bit, that it's very hard to start out with anything because you can't do anything with it. Like I can't play guitar at all. Like I can't play a song. It's just like I can just put my fingers in the shape of this chord and then just strum it, you know, for a while to kind of strengthen my fingers and get to the point I'm able to make that shape fast enough that I can kind of put it into a chord progression and play a little song, you know? I was able to relate to my students a little bit. It's like they're trying to learn to do these, you know, complicated movements, and it's like the beginning's the hardest part because you can't do anything. It's not fun until you get a little bit good at it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. But I think you're in agreement with me. I think that's, again, that's one of the biggest problems with people, I think, right now, is that they've given up.
Sure.
Because, and I think you've heard me say this before, it's like, as they get older, they're told all these things they can't do. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, your friend up the street that wants to be an artist, he wants to draw comic books for a living, he's silly, don't be like him.
Yeah.
But I want to draw comic books, you don't want to end up like him. Mm-hmm. Why don't I want to end up like, just trust me, you don't. And then that person maybe finds success as a comic book artist, and then the other person goes, man, I should have, when I was younger, done what you did. I should have gone the same path.
When I was younger is a big one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I should have done the path that you did, but I chose not to. Now it's too late.
Yep.
Now it's too late. And sure. It's like, well, you know, like.
You hear that with martial arts all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, I wish I was younger. I would do that. And I can kind of relate to it a little bit with guitar. You know, it's like most people probably start playing music. I don't know, how old were you, Dave? Like,
probably like 12.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so yeah. I was 26 when I first got, you know, so definitely a little bit late for most people, you know, but it's like,
yeah, but then
you're still young.
So, I mean, yeah. And you don't know when success is going to come. So the guy who currently sings for Alice in Chains, his name is William Duvall.
Yeah.
I used to see a band he played in called Comes With The Fall when I was like 17, 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And he snuck me into a show at a place on South Street called the Pontiac Grill, which I don't think exists anymore. I remember at the time thinking it was one of the coolest things in the entire world. He snuck me and two of my friends in, and like maybe two other people there that were underage. But like there was maybe 15, 20 people at the show, period.
Yeah.
And he snuck in a bunch of us. I remember, I'm sure at this point he doesn't remember, but I remember even at that point being like, I think at that point he was already in his 30s and he'd been doing music for a while and hadn't found any success.
Yeah.
And around that time he got a job working in Jerry Cantrell's band, who Jerry Cantrell's the guitar player / singer of Alice in Chains, who was doing solo stuff, and he joined that band, and that was some success. And then eventually they asked him to join Alice in Chains, and he really didn't find success in the music industry until like his late 30s, and now he's like, I think, in his late 40s or early 50s, and he's so like it's hard to predict. Sure, and like that's yeah. The thing is you know, like you kind of, if you have a passion for it and you believe in yourself, yeah, it might not work out, but if you stick with it and believe it, there's a good chance it might. Like, sure. I think the number one thing people do is they self-sabotage.
Yeah.
And they're just too easy to give up. They just give up on themselves.
Sure.
Like, I and it's way different in I think, teaching martial arts, because I think that the amount of people that claim they want to teach martial arts versus the amount of people that actually want to actually do it is pretty slim. I think there's a lot of people that actually believe they want to be a musician and actually do some things to make themselves a musician. I don't think there's that many people. I think there's lots of people like, oh, it would be cool to teach martial arts. But then the second that they have to like see what goes into it, they're like, wait, you mean I have to teach 4 to 8 year old kids? Sure. Yeah. That comes along with it. Often I don't want to teach kids.
Sure. I think often what people don't appreciate is that teaching is its own skill. And it's one of those things that it's like, just because you love martial arts and maybe even you're pretty good at it, doesn't mean that, you know, teaching is for you. And teaching is something that I'm very passionate about. I feel like I started doing it when I was young. I was 18, right out of high school was when I started teaching pretty much full time.
Yeah,
I wasn't getting paid, but you know, started to, and it was just something I feel like I took to pretty quickly, and I like doing a lot. And there's something about teaching that I think is extremely humble, in that it's kind of like when you accept the role of the teacher, it's like you're not the hero of that story.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're helping the hero of that personal journey, you know, get to that place when you decide to be a teacher. And I think it's a big problem you find in martial arts a lot of the time, that I think that you have teachers who don't kind of have that humble mentality. They have a very, very like entitled like mentality where they're very concerned with their image or their, you know, reputation in the world at large. I kind of see teaching as a little bit of something that's like, if you really want to be a teacher, I mean, you just kind of devoting your life to helping other people pursue this, something that they're passionate about.
So there's
about,
something you know? That my instructor Huron Gracie says a lot, which is he's like, too many people are worried about what their instructor can do to them, not for them.
Yeah.
And that mentality is very much the case, I feel like, with adults who train martial arts.
Yeah, absolutely.
They want the person who's teaching them to be able to dominate them, almost. And like they want to put this person up on a pedestal where they're untouchable and they're this monster because they're the guy who's teaching me. They're a black belt, maybe, and they're this monster. And if they aren't, then, well, why should I learn from you? This other guy, when I go to his school, he kills me.
Sure.
He crushes me. It's just not real life.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know,
well, that's the mark of a truly great teacher. It's not how good they are, but
exactly.
How good their students are.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah. So like, what can your instructor do for you? It is the more important question. But, you know, like you said, teaching is its own art, you know?
Sure.
So some people appreciate that and some people don't, and that's fine, you know?
You're talking about people that, you know, kind of will say like, yeah, I'd like to teach martial arts because they love jujitsu or something, and they look at it as something, hey, well, I love jujitsu, so you know, I'd love to teach it too. It's like, hey, you know, like, you should really try that first, because it's you know, it's not
easy.
You
see that all the time with music.
It's
I'd love
easy.
To be a musician,
sure.
And then they go on tour and they're like, this is what happens in a day, this is what a week's like, I'm good, this life isn't for me.
Sure.
And sometimes for some people, they're just like, listen, I'm not going to tour. I'm just going to play music.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to play music at home. Or I'm just not going to play music at all anymore. You know, it varies from person to person. But I mean, again, big picture is I think that there has to be an underlying passion for what you're doing if you're going to get involved in the arts. And if there's not, you're going to fizzle out.
Sure.
You're going to fizzle out. You're going to burn out real quick.
Yep. But if you have that passion, I guess it's a question people really need to ask themselves. I mean, you also need to be willing to kind of take the risk, make the sacrifice to know that, like, you know, you're entering into an industry where it's not... Martial arts, I feel like, is probably better than music for making money. Definitely better than music for making money. But still, you know, it's kind of like not the best way to kind of do it. I pursued teaching. It's been 10 years. I'm 28 now. I've been a teacher for 10 years now. And it's like, you know, when you start getting close to 30, and it's kind of like you start to see, like, other people my age, you know, or own houses and, you know, kind of doing that whole thing because they pursue, I guess, maybe more traditional careers, you know, went to college, you know, got a degree, got a good job. They've been in that job for a little while now. So, you know, they're raising up with it a little bit. It's like, there's advantages to that.
The advantages,
it gives you a little bit more sense of security for me. Well, and I'm really appreciative of the success that I've had.
I'll say this though, that sense of security, I think, is false in most cases because all it takes is one bad day. You get laid off or you get fired or the company goes under and then your life can turn around real quick. So the sense of security is a little bit false.
That's true of everybody.
It's a little bit false. Now, the other thing I would say is success knows no timeline. Success only knows whether you put the work in or not. And one of my favorite things that I love talking about is the person who sits on their couch and yells at, like, a professional football player or basketball player when they do something to stick up for themselves or something that they don't agree with. They're like, if I had this opportunity, I wouldn't do what they're doing. I'd do this. And it's like, well, I hate to tell you, if you had the opportunity, you would not do anything that of what you're saying. In fact, you'd be worse than these professional athletes because you have the opportunity every day to do something that's the equivalent to these professional athletes and you choose not to. And the amount of work that these professional athletes put in for the most part is insane. And if you had to go through what most of these people went through to get to the point where they got to be a professional athlete, you would quit halfway through because it's awful. It's awful. Like what these guys are doing, when you make a decision, what these men and women are doing when they make the decision to be a professional athlete is that they are giving up their physical health and mental health in exchange for maybe something they're passionate about, but also for financial gains in one way or another. But that's not even true of everyone. Like Robbie Andrews, who I talked to recently, again, he's doing well. Mm-hmm. It's not that he's doing bad, but how much money he said it himself, how much money is there really in track and field? And this is a guy who made the Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely.
He ran in the last Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, how much money is it really? So if you don't love it, how are you going to do it? You know, like what's going to motivate you to do it?
And have you ever heard that poem? I'm sure it's a very famous one, The Man in the Arena.
I haven't.
Look it up. You'd love it. It's a beautiful piece of verse. But it says, it was something like, it's not the critic that counts, you know, the crowd, you know, yelling. It's the man in the arena that really matters. And the guy that actually gets in there and does it, you know.
I love the NFL because I feel like the NFL is the poster child for people screaming at their couch. This guy's so, oh my God, if it was him, I... It's like, well, first of all, most of the guys in the NFL, it's the same pay disparities that we've been talking about with everything else. For every Antonio Brown had a $30 million guaranteed contract that he just squandered, you have 500 wide receivers that combined probably didn't make $30 million. Sure. There's a lot of guys that are signing contracts for $250,000 a year, and they have to pay their agent. Mm-hmm. That money gets taxed, and the breakdown is per game.
Sure.
And guess what happens if you get cut halfway through the season?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you don't get that money because NFL contracts are not guaranteed, and it happens a lot.
Yep.
And again, this is somebody that played for free and destroyed their body in high school.
Yep.
Played for free in college and destroyed their physical body, and then they got the chance to make it to the pros. And most of them don't even make enough money in their pro career to not have to work a job the day after they retire.
Sure. Yeah. Sad stories come out of professional sports.
And people don't want to talk because, again, everybody only wants to talk about the nice side. Sure. They only want to talk about the hyper-successful side. Now, within that, there's plenty of guys that you know, they'll tell you, hey, I played in the league for 3 years maybe, and I made this much money and I invested it properly. So I came out on top. And I have a college education, I have connections, and I can just, you know, invest this and
sure.
maybe work this job that I'm passionate about because I had a little bit more of a head start than some other people.
Well, that goes to the point I kind of want to wrap up with, because we're running out of time here, is that the idea of, you know, people that are able to be successful, being able to have multiple skills and be able to take kind of the experience, use the example of professional sports, that, you know, once you're kind of, your career as a professional athlete is over, it's like, okay, how can I leverage that experience to move forward and do something else?
Yeah.
And that's where most people fail. But, you know, what we're both trying to do, teach martial arts, you know, professionally for a living. In my experience, having done this, you know, for close to 10 years now, I've owned my own school for just this month. October is going to be 4th anniversary. I've owned the school, so it hasn't been that long. I've been a business owner, but I look at it that there are kind of three elements that I see, three main elements to success with it, is that you should be a good martial artist to start with.
Yeah.
Right? Which is its own, you know, kind of accomplishment. Then you have to also be a good teacher. You know, it has to be something you actually enjoy doing, you actually have some aptitude for, and you're able to teach well. And the third is you have to be a business owner.
Yeah.
And I can tell you 100% the one I've been struggling with the most, because I've been doing for the least amount of time, is the business part. It's like, okay, how do I actually run a business? It's like, oh, that's a whole nother thing to get into. It's just like, all right, you know, I'm a pretty good martial artist, done it, you know, since I was a child.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty good teacher, you know, because I've done that for a while now too. But now it's the struggle of being the business owner. It's like, how do you really monetize this?
Well, yeah.
And you know,
that's why
not easy to make it.
That's why it's not always the right decision for everybody to transition into making something they're passionate about into a career
sure.
or a job.
Yep.
Sometimes it's better just to stay on the sidelines and just be like, I love this thing.
Yep.
I can show up and do it, and then I can go home and leave. Well, and for other people, it's like, listen, I'm going to be sustained and happiest if this is my job and being passionate about going to work every day and loving what I do.
Yeah. You need to have a passion for every piece of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's very common. It's like, I have a real passion for doing martial arts, for training. It's like, okay, that's great. Do you also have a passion for teaching it? Or if not a teacher, as a competitor, do you have a passion for the sport?
I don't even know if you need to have a passion for the other aspects, but you need to understand that they all, if you want it to be a career, they all connect.
Sure.
And that sometimes you have to give a little bit. You might not like the business end. You might only like the teaching. You might not like the competition end. But you have to do a little bit of both, maybe, to
sure.
Got to become
competent.
So you can teach. Yeah.
You got to become competent.
Same thing. You might not like. You maybe only want to show up and compete. But it's like, if I don't have any business savvy, guess what? This other guy who wasn't as competitively successful as me, he's going to open up to successful school.
Sure.
So I better invest some time in that other skill.
Okay. All right, man. Good talk.
Well, yeah.
Keep training, everybody.
Yep.
Until next time.
Thanks for listening.